Hello, everybody. Thank you very much for downloading the Leeds Book Club podcast. Today we'll be discussing the first book in a fantastic young adult trilogy by Suzanne Collins called The Hunger Games. Joining us today will be a longtime podcaster and a good friend of mine from Twitter, Jay. And in fact, he's actually the person who turned me onto this trilogy in the first place. Jay, how did you discover the books?
Me and a friend on Twitter, Heather, I think you actually follow her.
And Endlessly Alaska, is it?
Yes. I'd always wanted to read the books. I'd seen them, and I'm just not a big young adult reader. I'm more of a, you know, historical fiction and things like that. More. Adult books, I guess, is what I think. And so I'd always been a little wary of reading them. I liked the premise and stuff. And so we started this little two-person book club, and that was one of her selections, was The Hunger Games, and instantly just loved. Yeah, I think I read the first one within 24 hours.
Yeah.
The second one I wasn't a huge fan of, so it took me like a week to read that one. And then the third one I absolutely loved and read in, again, like 24 hours.
Yeah, because obviously following the pair of you, I could see the two of you flipping out about this book. But like yourself, I was slightly, I mean, up until I think 2 years ago, I just didn't read young adult fiction at all because, you know, I really enjoyed them when I was that age, but I've progressed onwards. And I think maybe I was a bit of a snob about the whole thing, but it just never occurred to me to like go backwards and try them. But the two of you were raving about them. And like, you raved about them and then you'd stop for a week or so. Then you'd rave about them some more.
That was the week in between reading the book.
Exactly.
I'm the exact same way. I just, yeah, like you said, I read young adult at one point, and then, you know, you get in your 20s, and it was just like, I don't know, I just kind of moved out of the phase. I read more like Dan Brown or Connor Golden or, you know, yeah, like people like that. Stephen King is more my type of book.
Yeah.
And so I was a little bit wary of that, you know, young adult title.
The book elf that I do the regular podcast with, she recommended sort of three young adult series to me, and they're some of the most fantastic books that I've ever read. Sure, they're written with a younger audience in mind, but they cover huge concepts. You know, the characters are absolutely believable and really endearing, but also thoroughly realistic. And the fact that they're targeted at a younger audience in no way means that they're not absolutely fantastic books. God knows, I read enough drivel that's, you know, designed for my age group to just descend into a world like The Hunger Games, but I'm also thinking of The Chronicles of Ancient Darkness by Michelle Paver, The Dark is Rising series. I mean, they're just genuinely creepy, really well-written books that have these huge ideas, and they ask huge questions about who we are as people and as a species and where we want to go from here. And I think The Hunger Games just fits in with those so much, you know. I mean, the only thing that slightly, I read the blurb on the back of the book and I kind of thought, yeah, it sounds really good. And the author was there saying that she'd seen reality TV mixed in with images of the war, and that was kind of what inspired it, along with the myth of Theseus and the Minotaur. But when I read the back of the book, all I could think of was Battle Royale.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen it?
No, I haven't.
Oh my God.
I'm aware of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fantastic film, but the setup sounds so similar to this. And I think the games themselves do, but the world of Panem that Suzanne Collins has created is so, it's so believable, you know, but it feels almost like historical fiction just written from somebody further ahead in time than we are, you know?
Yeah, it's definitely very close to home. Just all the themes that she brings out, the world that she creates, it's not, I mean, there are a lot of fantastical things in it, but it's not a huge stretch from you know, today's reality. I mean, look at reality television, how ridiculous it's getting, you know?
But if you look back in time as well, I mean, look at the circuses that they used to have in you know, ancient Rome.
Ancient Rome, absolutely.
We have, for a very long time, been quite happy to watch people torn apart by animals and other people and weird circumstances, you know. The human race, we've gotten a bit squeamish in the last few hundred years, but ultimately, we're really bloodthirsty.
We are, and now it's just like the high high-tech version of it.
Yeah, I thought that the, because you start reading it and they don't, they just sound like poor people, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. Like, everybody works really hard. In actual fact, I had just been reading something about the miners' strike in England. And and I think because it's set in a mining region, you just sort of felt like this is... It was almost bland how commonplace the scenario was. And it wasn't until she sort of mentioned the electric fence that kept them all in and some of the animals that she mentioned. And you were kind of going, well, that's not real. You know, I mean, they're the only aspect. But it's like I'm reading Margaret Atwood, because she writes sort of speculative fiction. I would call it science fiction. But she'll create these sort of animals that are like a mixture of a dog and a pig. And they sound really... conceivable. It sounds like something that's only 10 years away, not like, you know, this big leap in time. And when I was reading certainly the initial parts of the first book, The Hunger Games, I mean, it really felt like, you know, it's not, and maybe it's not Europe, or maybe rather it's not my area of Europe, but there are places where this feels like it could happen. I'm sure it's the same in the US.
Oh, absolutely. And like you said, when she first started, like, I actually just went back and read my review on the... We did a little blog for our book club, and I had a review up of it. And this was kind of... When I first read the books, I really liked them. I really enjoyed them. Mm. But I didn't... You know, I think I gave it, like, an 8 out of a 10. You know, I didn't, like, have that huge love for it until I finished the entire series and just immediately went back. You know, sometimes the writing did feel... a little bit too geared to a different audience for me. Like, sometimes, especially in the beginning, like once we got into the capital and got into the games portions of the books, it really opened up, and the writing opened up, and it got, you know, very adult for a very brutal for what I would consider young adult.
Yeah.
And so, you know, yeah, it started out a little shaky, but again, just the first part completely believable, and just, I don't know, seeing how they separated the districts, that they were all responsible for this one thing, that that's what they did, and they worked, you know, day and night, and just how hard it was to you know, get food and things like that. It's definitely not a huge stretch.
Just to summarize, the way the story is structured is that 75 years from the beginning of the book, 75 years in the past, there were 13 districts and a capital. The 13 districts rebelled against the capital and were cruelly and brutally crushed. District 13 was decimated off the map entirely, and the rest of the districts were allowed to continue on condition that they provided two teenagers, a boy and a girl, between the ages of, I think, 12 and 18, who would participate in the Hunger Games. And throughout the whole sort of initial 3 or 4 chapters, the games themselves are quite vague. But what it actually turns out, it is a circus, except it's a very high-tech circus. An arena is created, but this is over miles of land with built-in terrors and also rewards, lots of different conditions. And each of these kids, be they 18 or 12, are literally fighting for their lives. However, this is where I think the real world aspect of it ties in. It's all put on television. Everybody must watch it at all times. And every kid that participates in the games has watched every other game. There's no real sense of shock or surprise. There's such resignation in the way the characters respond to being picked for the games. And I found that was really powerful. But like you were saying there, just to go back to sort of the bigger analysis of it, I think it was a little bit like Harry Potter. You read sort of the first Harry Potter novel, and it's a children's book. It's only when you finish the seventh that you realise how detailed the world created was, you know. I was reading about Katniss and Peeta and their journey to the capital, and it was from that moment on that I think it really started to become so vivid for me. You know, when she's talking about the train journey and the servants that don't have any tongues because they've been punished for various crimes. I mean, I was reading it sort of going, Jesus, as a 13-year-old, I would have found this scary, you know.
Well, and that's the thing is, I mean, you have these Avoxes, you know, no tongue, walking around just, you know, serving these people of the capital, and that's just normal behavior.
Mm.
Like, I mean, you put Katniss and Peeta in, who are not from the capital, who aren't used to obviously ever being served in their lives, and they look at it and they're confused. But just as, I mean, all these just vapid rich people are just here with these children who are tormented and forced into servitude if they're not killed. Mm. It's just, I don't know, it's insane.
Well, one of the, I think I said it in the review, some of my favorite characters was basically Katniss and Peeta are sent to the capital, and they're each sort of dolled up so that they present themselves with their best face forward. They each get a stylist and a team, and these basically pluck, prod, paint, make the kids up in order to appeal to an audience. Because there's, and you can tell the subtext, there's a huge gambling world that goes on behind the games. You know, they're popularity competitions. They frequently make reference to the fact that the kids from District 1 and 2 are basically trained for the games, even though that's supposedly not allowed. I think my favourite character setups were Cinna, the stylist, and his three assistants, because they seem that Cinna's obviously, he's got a bigger plan in motion. He's just like one of those quiet, intelligent people who's got a great eye. But his three assistants are dippy, like dippy to the point of, I don't know how they dress and feed themselves on a regular basis. They are so vacuous. And they're doing her
but
up.
That's the thing, they probably don't have to. They probably have a little AVOX servant that does it for them.
I know. That is both horrifying and incredibly convenient at the same time. But they really like Katniss. They get on with her. They enjoy working with her. And then it's like, bye, have luck in the games. You're probably going to be killed. But, you know, that's fine too. And they've no heart. They've no compassion. It's like been bred out of them.
Yeah, I know Cinna is a huge character in the books, and he's a huge fan favorite. Since I've read the books, you know, I've come into a lot of people that have read them and love them, and Cinna is generally a well-regarded character.
Mm.
And, you know, I think he's a good character. Again, like you said, he's kind of that quiet type that just, he constantly has his plan in motion, and he's very smart, but he's not loud and obnoxious and, you know, let's start a revolution. And,
yeah.
He just has his own way to go about doing things, and it was very fun to read.
Yeah, oh, so much enjoyed that. And I loved the way that they're described. The fact that the two stylists obviously had like decided to coordinate from a very early stage their appearances. So Peeta and Katniss frequently compliment one another in a way that the other districts just didn't seem quite to do, except for What was Rue's district? Was that District 4?
I think it was 11.
11. I mean, her partner and herself, they seemed to really sort of bond as well. But it was so visual. It was like if you closed your eyes, you could sort of see the images that were popping out on the page to you, you know. And I so enjoyed that. I loved the interviews as well. You could see, like, a Graham Norton-type character, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Doing his best to draw them out and asking them their stories, and you know, and I thought that was just so well done. The fact that like Katniss just doesn't give a crap about any of that. She just thinks it's all nonsense. Just put me on the ground, and I'm gonna try and not die till the end. You know, and you know.
Exactly. Like, look, I promise my sister I'm not gonna die. That's the best I can do.
Yeah, and they're all kind of like, and what's your favorite color?
Shoot an arrow at the gang people and see what. You know, walk out of the training session, it's hilarious to watch her.
Oh, God. I mean, something that I'm quite happy to spoil, because I know the vast majority of people who listen to this will probably have read the books, but if you haven't, there's this scene where Katniss and Peeta and all of the individual, what you call them, tributes, have to go into like a room of judges and show off their special skill so that later the judges can kind of work in particular challenges unique to their skill set, and because they're from District 12, Peeta and Katniss are the last ones to go in, and when Katniss goes in, all of the like judges and stuff are, you know, they've been drinking, they've eaten too much, they're totally out of it, and she's so disgusted at their lack of respect, given that she is about to, you know, go into the arena to die. She shoots an arrow at an apple that one of them is holding, you know, and I had a proper, like, whoop on the bus. I was on the bus, in public, whooping because a fictional character did that.
Although it's poor Peter, I mean, he just goes in and he tosses, you know, bags of flour around for like an hour, and these people are sitting over here getting drunk, and the poor guy, I mean, he's great at conversation and he's great at manipulation and things like that when you get him in front of this huge crowd. Mm. But as far as like having any like outward you know, skills to for the games, he just didn't really have any like flashy things.
Yeah,
like,
how do you
a bow and arrow or anything?
How do you demonstrate endurance?
I can see him throwing around sacks of flour.
Hamish. He won the games like 25 years ago. He is a degenerate alcoholic. He really doesn't like them all that much. He really doesn't seem to care whether or not they survive at all. And I really enjoyed the fact that like from the moment that I think Peter asked that they be mentored separately. Because Hamish had this big plan about how they were going to work together and that was going to be like their thing. And Katniss was kind of like, whatever, I'm only here in body. And and Peter was kind of like, yeah, the fact that she's only here in body is freaking me out a little bit. So I want to go separately. And it was from that moment on that he properly steps up and goes, you know what? One of the two of you could survive. It would be really nice not to be the only Egypt dragged out year in, year out, you know. And I just loved him. I think... Again, he was one of my favourite characters. I went from thinking that he was purely a stereotype and a really one of those stereotypes that I really rail against, you know, this one-dimensional drunk. And then by the end of the book, it was just like, of course he's talking to you. He's communicating via tiny little parachuted gifts.
I love that relationship, just like that you said, that he and Katniss kind of got each other. Mm. And they had that relationship that was shown throughout the entire games of, you know, he's going to hold back water from her because she's so close to water and she gets that. And,
yeah.
You know, just he only sends her things that she absolutely needs. It's not, you know, she's not going to sit in her tree every night and have this huge pile of bread and water. And
But it's also like this...
I don't know, they just had a relationship that really worked.
It's proper psychological warfare as well, though. She doesn't do, you know, he's like, he's got a game plan. She doesn't want his game plan. Well, you're not getting anything from me until you toe the line. You know, and you could, like, when she's describing it so well in the book, because she's a bit slow on the uptake. Like, after the bit with the water, I sort of started to cop on. It took her ages. When she, like, kind of clocks and go, oh my God, he wants me to do this. I'm going to do everything I think that he wants and get as many rewards as possible. Like, she has a proper, you know, click moment.
Yeah, light bulb moment.
Yeah.
Yeah, you definitely, she's not the easiest character to get along with. You could definitely say that. And she has her own way about doing things. So it's hard for her to break through that stubborn nature and to realize that he's not just, it's easier for her to just, you know, degrade Hamish and talk about how bad he is and he's withholding things because he doesn't like me. And,
yeah,
you know, it's a lot easier to have him as a scapegoat than actually think of him as an ally.
Yeah, and I loved the fact that she has this moment where she was kind of going, okay, if I go with the plan, I'll get rewards. Crap. I wish I'd paid attention to the plan. You know?
I'm stuck out here all alone now.
Yep. Shit, you know, what am I going to do? And I loved that. I loved that I loved Katniss from the very outset because she does what so few female characters, be it adult, young adult, you know, geriatric books. She is thoroughly independent. She never tries to make herself pretty. And I don't mean like physically pretty because, you know, to be honest, I think she's a girl on the cusp of puberty. I don't think she's all that aware of, you know, like there's some very brief thoughts of Gale in terms of his attractions and that kind of thing, but she's quite young for all of that. But I mean, like, she never tries to make herself pretty to the audience, to the reader. She's just thoroughly honest. It's the life that she's led. She's not gonna bullshit. She's not gonna, you know, play any games to make you like her. In fact, when she tries to do that, she's a little bit obnoxious. And I loved her. I thought she was so real. I was an obnoxious teenager. You know? It made sense to me that she would have some really iffy qualities as well, you know. That felt very real.
Yeah, to me, she was a hard character to get along with. I mean, I always respected her, you know, for what she did for her sister, and I always looked at her as a strong character. But for me, just I had reservations about her just because her distrust of everyone. And I mean, obviously, in the world that they're in, you can see how that would breed distrust and dishonesty and a lot of bad things. But I don't know, that I think that's why Peeta just really, he was my absolute favorite character through all three of the books. He just had such a different nature than anybody else in the book. He had just this beautiful nature that, I mean, I don't know, I just really took to it, and just his optimism throughout the worst of situations, I absolutely loved.
Yeah, I mean, I think in my review of the first book, I think I described Peeta as hope. How can you dislike hope? He's not blindly optimistic. He's aware that he is going to have to kill somebody, and somebody is going to try and kill him. He doesn't have any illusions about that, but he's a noble soul. But I didn't really relate to him because he was so grown up. You know, he was all of the things that you've said, and I admired him so much for that. And there were times when I, quite frankly, I found him to be far more honorable than Katniss. But like, I was never that good. You know, he there was something not, and he never came across as precious or pious or anything. I just sort of thought, I understood why she went hunting with Gale and why she avoided him at school. You know, I don't know what do you talk about? They've got this huge experience that they have in common, but otherwise, he's so nice. What would you talk to him about?
See, I think that's, and that's what I said in regard to your I loved you calling him Hope in your review. And I think one of the things I said is that each of the main characters like represents something that you can relate to, and like you said, you related to Katniss, and I think I relate to Peeta, and just that just his nature and his optimism, and just like you said, being good and things like that. It's just like you find parts of yourself in these characters, and that's what really draws you to a particular character, whether it's Gale or Katniss or Peeta, or hopefully not Haymitch, but it's those two. But you know, you're just drawn to these characters. And I remember there was a part of the book when they were up on the roof before the game started, and you know, Peeta was, you know, trying to express to Katniss how he didn't want to change in the games, and he didn't want, you know, he was gonna kill. You know, I mean, that was, you know, she asked him obviously up front, "Are you not gonna kill?" And I mean, he was always gonna kill. He's gonna do what he has to do to try to survive these games. But at his core, he didn't want to let the Capitol
Win.
really win, and that's the only way they could have won is not killing him in the arena, but you know, killing his soul. And that just that was probably my favorite moment of the book.
I think the book, for me, it splits into two. There's all of the build up, and they're getting preened and prodded and put in front of the cameras and dragged out of their homes. And then there's the games themselves, and I mean, it's a totally different book for about halfway through, and it utterly changes. I think eight characters die within the space of 4 pages. You know, and I mean, it's one of the funny things because I was trying to look up who's playing who in the film, which I'm hoping we might move on to just before the end of the podcast, because it's not the point. The books are the books, but I was trying to look up like various characters, and I realized that like so many of the middle districts, you never learn their names. You don't learn anything about them, you know, and that was why it was kind of the character of Rue, who is kind of Katniss's direct opposite. She's tiny, she's light, she's also really, I think she's very family orientated, so they've got that in common. But she's also quite gentle, and I loved that part where she had her unique whistle, and the mockingjays, which by the way are an awesome creation, would repeat that back to her. And I found her, Rue's character, to be like an oasis in this section of the book, because there's just so much violence and brutality and betrayal. And then there's Rue, and she's up flying through the tops of the trees, and you know, and she's whistling her little song, and birds are joining in. And honestly, it was like cold water on a hot day. I loved her. I just thought she was absolutely beautiful.
Yes, there's nothing bad that you could possibly say about Rue. I remember the first time I read it though, and I love going back and reading her sections of the book. Like you said, it's just that, it's that sigh of relief in the middle of just, I mean, you've just seen this huge cornucopia battle, and you know, talking about stepping off your pressure plate, and
oh, God.
You do before the 60 seconds, you're blown to pieces.
Yeah.
You know, it's just all this insane stuff is going on, and then you just get this little reprieve where she and Katniss become really good friends. But there was always that point in my mind knowing that, and the same with PETA, there was always that point of knowing that, okay, all of these people can't win. You know, what's going to happen if Rue and Katniss are the last two left in this game?
Yeah.
And, you know, there was always that little...
I think I always knew that Rue was going to die.
Mm-hmm.
The same way that you know the ones that are named, Foxface and Rue, and the two from District 2, and the really snide boy. I can't think of his name now.
Kato and Glimmer are from District 2, I think.
Yeah. I always knew that they were. It was going to come down to them, if you know what I mean. Because that's how the book is structured. The ones that didn't have any names, they were going to die off fairly quickly. But I loved the fact that that Rue's partner hadn't been named until much later in the book. And I thought that the interactions between, you know, because at one point he actually saves Katniss. And he sort of goes, did you kill Rue? And she goes, I did not kill Rue. I was friends with Rue and she taught me her silly little song. And he's like, all right then, I won't kill you. For now, and he wanders off, but there was a real you've done me good, so I'll do you good, and I thought that was just absolutely lovely. It came across so they felt so mature in the book, you know, like in a way that you know the real world doesn't always seem to be. And then for the way the character of Foxface actually dies, you know, I mean, I thought that was really clever. I was shocked.
I liked that all of these characters in the arena, you didn't get a lot of information about them, but you got enough that they felt three-dimensional.
Yeah.
You got enough from Katniss's point of view that, you know, they said the name of the career tributes, and you kind of got this idea of them in your head.
Big.
You know, we didn't get their parents or their backstory or whatever.
Yeah.
But we got enough just to create this whole three-dimensional villain for Katniss to face off against in the arena.
Yeah.
And like you said about owing people, that was a big theme throughout the book, because you see when Katniss was small about PETA handing her the bread when she was starving.
Mm.
And, you know, there's all these points throughout the book that Katniss feels like she owes PETA because he just constantly tries to save her. He aligns with, you know, the career tributes to help keep her alive. And just all these things. He saves her constantly throughout the book. And I loved the ending of her being able to, you know, give him the sleep syrup and go to this feast that the Capitol has created.
I thought that was brilliant. The way he has, like, the big sulk.
It was so fun to read.
I just thought when he had that through that massive strop the next day when he realized what had happened. And I quite liked the fact that, like, at that point, because she was very much like, I had to go and get the medicine for you, and I had to take care of you. And I think that's the moment when it was really cemented to PETA that Haymitch didn't actually, you know, Haymitch had bet on the other player.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think, because Katniss is not a subtle creature.
No.
You know, she can hunt and she can creep through the forests totally silent, but she is blind to the people around her. And I thought that was something the book did very well, that the characters that we cared about the most throughout the book were generous. You know, they had generous hearts, and Cinna, you know, making Katniss a player, because she could have so easily just been the sulky, quiet girl that nobody noticed, you know. PETA, that gave her the bread that saved her in the first place. Gale, that promised that he was going to look after her mother and you know, her younger sister. I mean, they all had a hint of kindness that I don't necessarily think Katniss had at the beginning of the book, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But then I like that she learns from them all. I'm making it sound like it was so ABC, and it really wasn't that way at all. You know?
No, I understand exactly what you're saying, because that's why I was always a fan of PETA and Katniss being together, because they were such polar opposites, but it just worked so well, just his nature, and they both could learn things from each other, because, you know, at times he was a little bit too soft, and she was a bit harsh, and so their natures just, I don't know, they worked for me together. together, and just to see them learn from each other, see them in the cave in the games, and I don't know, just reacting off each other at times, not knowing whether it was for the games and for Haymitch's gifts, or if it was for, you know, their own self, or, you know, Katniss being with PETA. Did she really want to be there, or was it just for the games?
Well, that was kind of something that annoyed me a little bit, because I think PETA was, he came across as being really smart and really articulate, and then I think a bit dumb, really. Because I thought it was quite obvious, like, the way she was really stilted with him and quite cold, and then she'd realise they needed something and give him a bit of a kiss. I don't understand how he could have ever bought into it.
But yes, then, but you have to understand that this was a kid who's been in love with this girl since he was four.
Yeah.
He, for the first time in his life, she's speaking to him. I mean, I don't think it was this huge, he's dying, he's losing blood. Mm. You know, he's in a cave in these Hunger Games where everybody and everything is trying to kill him.
Yeah.
And this one girl from his entire life is showing him a little bit of attention.
Yeah.
I don't think he cared. I think he was just like, hey, pretty girl, attention. I don't care. Okay, it may be for gifts, but hey, yeah. I'll take it.
Well, what I was actually building up to there is that I think that it was because we only hear about it from her perspective. And I think that she was rationalizing a lot by the end of the book. Like, I think she was kind of, she was telling it all like it was this cold, unemotional thing. But I think we actually watch her kind of fall for him a little
bit.
She's just blind.
You know? Yeah, I was a bit, I expected most people to be Gale fans as far as, you know, for Gale and Katniss.
Mm. And but he's barely in this book.
Since I've read the books and talked to people, I only know of one or two actual Gale fans, but when I was reading the book, like, I thought there was no hope for PETA.
Mm.
Like, I wanted them to be together, but I just didn't think there was even a chance in hell that was going to happen.
Yeah.
And, but I loved watching them in the caves together and building that relationship and that foundation. I thought it was, again, almost a little break. I know he's dying and, you know, everything's trying to kill him, but again, it was just a little break of great character development.
Yeah. I think, again, one of the things that I think I was aware of the Gale issue before I should have been, because certainly at the end of the first book, he's barely in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I never really saw him as any major competition to PETA. Like, I think that I think she'd built him up in her head, but I think PETA had awakened the feelings in her. It was being away from Gale and being with PETA that made her sort of compare the two of them. But I never saw him as... I always thought that by the time she got back, assuming that she would get back, their lives had just diverged. They had such different experiences then, and that was one of the reasons why I quite liked that they kept bringing up his politics, that he was so vitriolic against the Capitol. I thought that it was really good to have, even if it was his voice in her head, sort of saying, these people don't care about you. You are fodder to them. You are an animal that's going to be killed. And he informed so much of her world, but I didn't feel that until the second book.
You know, I didn't really, again, like you said, he's barely in the first book, and even, you know, he's not huge really until the third book.
Mm.
And, I didn't get a lot about his character. To be honest, I didn't pay him much attention. The only reason I even really mentioned him in my first review of the book was because Heather is a huge Gale fan. So that's the only reason I ever even thought of the character. And I think maybe that's why I overhyped his character as far as PETA not having a chance, is because, I don't know, I thought of him as maybe a little bit bigger than he was.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
I loved, after reading all three books, and just, I didn't catch anything about his nature in the first book, really, other than he and Katniss hunting and things like that.
Mm.
But there's just so many little hints of his just warlike nature, I guess. Just so many little lines here and there in the first book that completely tell you where he's going to be in the third book.
Yeah.
They completely show you his nature that first time through, I never caught at all.
Yeah. Now, obviously, the two of us are very aware of the fact that, and I think I've blogged about it, there's going to be a Hunger Games film.
Yes, Hunger Games. So
yay!
Excited.
I'm very excited about this. And I'm really excited because PETA is going to be played by Josh Hutcherson.
Yes.
And he's brilliant. I've been watching him since he was a tiny little kid, so I'm really excited to see him, although it'll be weird having him blonde.
I don't think he's that. I know in the new posters, like, he's really, really blonde, but in the actual movie photos, he doesn't look very blonde. So I think that's a little photoshopping. But I've only seen him since I heard about the Hunger Games.
Yeah.
I've never seen him in anything, and so I went back and I watched The Kids Are All Right.
Yeah. Oh wow.
He did excellent in that movie, so I'm excited to see him as Peeta. I was glad because I didn't really know him, and you know, Peeta being my favorite character, I was a little you know, cautious of who plays him. But I thought he was great in that movie.
I'm not so familiar with them, Jennifer Lawrence, at all. I don't know.
See, she was the only one that I knew out of like the main three. She was the only one I'd ever seen. I've seen her in X-Men First Class, and actually, I think her first big movie was called Winter's Bone. I haven't seen it, but she was nominated for an Academy Award, so she can't be too terrible.
Oh wow, God, I'm just I have no culture. I've not seen any of these things.
I never saw the movie, but I do remember from the award show because she looked great, and I was just like, wow.
Okay, and now I'm going to say something that's really horrible and judgmental. You know the guy Liam Hemsworth that's playing? He's going to be playing Gale.
Yes.
I know his older brother is Thor, or as I prefer to call him, Fwar. And he's going to be in the Avengers, which I'm quite excited about. But I know nothing about him, and I'm really not inspired by him at all.
Actually, I think Heather is very disappointed by this choice as Gale, because, you know, that's her favorite character, I think.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I've never seen the guy in anything. I like his older brother.
Mm.
That's basically all I can say. I've seen his older brother in things.
As always, thank you very much for listening, and we'll be bringing you book 2 in the Hunger Games trilogy, Catching Fire, very shortly. Thank you. Bye.